Every year in when so many Unitarian Universalist churches wade into the water of a new church year, we started off with an annual water ceremony that gives us a new opportunity to explore the rich spiritual symbolism of water. Water is essential to our lives. We can't live without it. It nourishes all life. It refreshes us. And we love to look at it and play in it. And water is also dangerous. We can't live without it, but we can't live in it. We're not fish. Like most things, too much of a good thing is not good at all. So all week, we've been watching the terrible news from the states where Hurricane Harvey has dumped more water all at once on several states than any other storm in American history. You may remember that the story of Noah in the Bible is about a great flood that wiped out almost all the life on earth except the animals that Noah could load into that great big boat called the Ark. And the way the story is told, it's said that it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Well, we had a little picture this week of what the storytellers imagined in the Noah story when it rained steadily for only 4 days and four nights. And look what happened. So I chose the title for my sermon this week, many weeks ago, and who would have thought that it would fit so well with the challenges that the people in Texas and Louisiana and Tennessee have been dealing with. Come hell or high water is a phrase that sometimes gets used to express your determination to do something, to achieve a goal, no matter what. And for all the people who have lost their homes or their livelihoods or their family members in this disaster, this determination to start over, despite the hell of the high water, is going to be crucial. A little later in the service, we will hear more about how we can help, because we will be dedicating our morning offering today to hurricane flood relief. But right now, let me just say a little bit more about the title of this service today, because I was trying to track down where this expression came from, and I was thinking originally that it might be associated with one of those great stories from ancient cultures, or maybe from the Bible, you know, something religious, for heaven's sakes, but it was a little spooky given what has happened this week for me to realize that this is an expression that probably has its roots in Texas from 19th century longhorn cattle drives in the American Southwest. The cattlemen of that era had two great trials ahead of them when they set out to drive their cattle to market. One of the trials that they had to face was hot, dry prairies, even deserts that they had to cross, and the other was rushing rivers that they had to ford. They had good reason to fear both the prairie heat and the possibility of flash floods if it rained. But come hell or high water, they were going to get those cattle to market. So even though I didn't find in my research that come hell or high water had a direct connection to any great religious story, the more I thought about it, I realized it certainly did connect to the imagery in one of the oldest stories in Western history that appears very early in Hebrew scriptures, in the book of the Bible that Christians call the Old Testament. It's a story that features an escape from slavery, from the hell of slavery. It has people trapped by a pillar of fire on one side and dangerous high water on the other. And many of you have probably guessed by now, it's the story in the Hebrew Bible known as the Exodus story. The story of Moses leading the Hebrew people out of slavery in Egypt to a new land that they had been promised. I'm wondering how many people now, as the years go by, have actually seen the old movie, The Ten Commandments, that tells that story. Who's seen that movie? Okay, you watch TV Land, or it comes out every year around Passover time. Well, normally this is a story we might tell at Passover season, but today with Linda's help, we're going to tell one part of the story in a more active way that you can all join in with. This story also has a song that goes with it, and it's the song that is going to be our hymn of the month for the month of September. Some of you may know it already, but let's learn it together if you don't know it with the help of Andrew and our choir members. So, we just left Moses standing on a rock overlooking the Red Sea with the people of Israel standing below him, looking over their shoulders at the great army of Egypt charging after them. And Moses has opened his arms and raised his staff, and he has said, "Behold the power of the Lord our God." And the winds blow, and if you saw the movie, what you presume happens next is the water miraculously parts, and it's awesome. But what if it didn't happen that way? What if there's another ending to that story, or maybe a different version of the story that Jewish people like to tell? Because one of the great things about Jews and their stories is that they like to tell the stories over and over again, century after century, and look for different possibilities for how the story can teach us new things. So their teachers, their rabbis, will retell stories and even make comments on them, and those comments are collected into what they call a book called the Midrash. And, you know, it's treated with as much respect as the original story. So let me tell you a different ending to the story of Moses and the Red Sea, as told by the rabbis who wrote a Midrash on this great story. So Moses gets to the edge of the Red Sea with Pharaoh's army riding across the desert after them to capture them and take them back to slavery. And all the people who trust Moses as their leader are expecting something amazing to happen because Moses has this special relationship with God and God will save them. So when Moses raises that staff, like he's going to make the waters part and the people are ready to cross over and nothing happens, they're pretty upset. He can't do it. And the people start to grumble and worry. "Moses, what's up with you?" Moses looks down at all of them. He says in Hebrew, "Beats me, I'm doing my very best here." So he tries again. "Behold the power of the Lord your God." The Egyptian army is getting closer and closer. Nothing happens. Finally, somebody says, "You know, I think we better swim." Well, that sets off another round of grumbling and fear and worry. "I got three kids here with me. This is no time for swimming lessons. Have you stuck a toe in that water? It's really cold. Hey, what about you, Moses? You go first." But Moses says, "Oh, sorry, I can't swim." So by now, lots of people are moaning and groaning. But still, no one wants to be the first to wade into the water. Until one guy whose name was Nahshon, steps up. Now, people knew Nahshon. He was actually a relative of Moses. He was Moses' brother Aaron's brother-in-law. And he was one of those good volunteers. If he was in a church like this one, you'd probably know him as a committee chair or maybe a board member. That type of guy who's always willing to help out. But at this critical and dangerous time, the people of Israel needed something more than a guy who was just willing to help out. They needed someone to be a leader, someone who could do something that Moses couldn't do, someone who was willing to wade into that water and to do it first. "Hey, Moses," he says, I know you can't swim. I mean, I'm not much of a swimmer either, to tell you the truth, but you know how to pray, so why don't you do what you do best and pray for a miracle? God listens to you. I'll go in." So Moses flings his beard over his shoulder, bows his head, asks all of the Hebrew people to pray, all the while keeping an eye on Nahshon. And Nahshon goes to the edge of the Red Sea. He sticks his toe in the water, then his foot. Nothing happens. He keeps going, gets up to his knees. Nothing happens. Keeps going. The water's rising. He keeps walking, starting to move with his hands now. The water's rising. Moses is starting to worry that nothing's going to happen. And Moses is ready to throw his arms out again and raise his staff, but this time instead of saying, "Behold the power of the Lord our God," he's going to say, "Nashon, come back." But Nashon keeps going. He gets up to his nose, and the water is just about to rise up over his head, and that's when the waters part. Now you can look awestruck. There's a passage of dry land for the people to go across. They can all wade in now because even though it's a lot of mud and puddles, they can see a way forward. The Hebrew people escape Pharaoh's army in the nick of time. So it took Nashon, not just Moses, to make a way for the Hebrew people to cross over to get to the promised land they were seeking. It took one person from the people who was willing to wade into the water all the way up to his neck and believed that something new was going to happen and that his willingness to take the risk would make a difference. This year, together, we're going to be wading into some deep and unfamiliar waters. There is a promised land on the other side that we can get to, but it's going to take a couple of years of exploration and review and engagement and dreaming big. But this story reminds us that nothing can happen unless there's a Moses and a Nashon who can do it together. Moses can get people to come to the edge of the water, but it takes Nashon, a member of the congregation, to go into the deep. It was his courage and faith and determination that made it possible for the leader, Moses, to make the waters part. But without Nashon, it would have all been lost. I don't think that the moral of this story is any special revelation to the people in this congregation. You have all waded in before, where angels and maybe even some of your other Moses types would have feared to tread. So it is, and so it shall be this year as we go into the deeper waters that will test us. But if we do wade in together, we will be able to say to those who are willing to just come to the edge of the sea and are not certain what to do next, "Come on in," we'll say. "The water's fine in here." And we'll all be able to say, "We will get to the promised land."